Whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. Hello and welcome to the I Could Never Do That podcast. I'm Carrie Barrett, and these are the stories of people who have gone into the arena and fought hard to achieve the unthinkable in spite of the fact that, yes, sometimes they are scared and do have some insecurities. Are you ready to go in? It's my hope that after hearing some of these interviews with thought leaders and artists, athletes, musicians, and entrepreneurs, that maybe you too will be able to go from, I could never do that, to, you know what? Maybe I can. My guest today is someone who encountered a personal and all too common dilemma after she had her son 8 years ago. And as someone who worked full-time in corporate and tech jobs for most of her career, Jill Jacobs was anxious to get back to work after giving birth. And not only because she actually loved working, but as she shares with us today, she needed to get back to work to support her home, her lifestyle, and her new baby's needs. But quickly, 8 years ago now, after her son was born, she realized just how daunting and unsustainable going back to work full-time was going to be for her. And because here she was, working full-time, paying somebody else to be home with her child. And when she did get home from work, she was clearly not bringing her best self to the family. And, you know, working long hours to maintain the life that she'd built without really any time to enjoy it. Oh, it's the American dream, isn't it? But here's the deal. Educated women with children are leaving the workforces in droves. And what Jill wanted was ultimately to work, of course, but she wanted to work smarter. She wanted to spend smarter. And she wanted to love what she was doing. So since she wasn't able to really find that in the workplace, she started it herself. Enter her vision for better balance. And at her business, Better Balance, Jill and her team connect professionals who want to work less than 40 hours a week with the employers who are looking to hire them. They help people find fulfilling part-time professional work that leverages their education, their experience, their talents and skills, while still maintaining a balance that fits their priorities in life. Jill offers valuable and real insights about starting a business from the ground up, taking risks, and the value of finding mentors and supporters in your endeavors. And as difficult as it is, she does stress the importance of taking small steps and imperfect action. And I know that that's hard for anyone to hear. The actions that you take must be imperfect. I love this I could never do that theme of taking a problem and creating a solution, not just so that you can flourish, but to help others do the same. So please welcome the person doing that with Better Balance, Jill Jacobs. So I walk in your office, Jill, this morning, and you are hard at work with your accountability partner, planning your to-do list for today and for the rest of the week. Talk to me about that, because I walked in and I was like, I'm missing out on something really cool here.
Well, Kim and I both struggle to get everything done that we want to do. We're both juggling several different things. Both of us have two businesses we're trying to manage. And we were in a course yesterday about time mapping, and everything she says, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can relate to that. And we've been accountability partners for like 6 months, and we fail at it. Like we have it on the calendar and we both just ignore it. And I'm like, we have the same habit of ignoring the things on our calendar. So I said, come to the office tomorrow morning. Let's sit down. Let's plan our week. Because when I do it, it works. When I make a list of everything I need to do and then, you know, what gets scheduled gets done, it works. Instead of just flying by the seat of my pants and dealing with what's most urgent. So that's what we were doing. And I said, well, it's just, I need to meet you face to face or on Zoom. We just talking on the phone and like you're, you know, driving to HEB and I'm picking up my kid from school. Like that's not working. We need to sit down and be together either physically or on Zoom.
Yeah, no, I mean, there was some magic happening that I was that I was witnessing. And this will lead into the bulk of today's conversation. But to continue on that theme a little bit, when you say that you have these massive to-do lists because there's so many priorities competing in your lives, what tends to fall first? Is it the big stuff that just feels overwhelming, or is it the little things that no one wants to do but need to be done?
No, I think for me, it's the big stuff that needs to get done. The big projects that I'm like, okay, this is sit down and think for, maybe not think, but like this is, I need to go spend an hour just working on just this. And what I find is I'll be like, oh, I could do that one little thing real quick. And then, you know, 10 minutes go by. And then, you know, another thing for 10 minutes, like, oh, I could do that. And we were talking about that. I'm like, it's like the death by the 5 or 10 minute cut, mm-hmm, right? Where it's mm-hmm. like you get to the end of the day, you're like, okay, well, I got all these little things done, which is great. They're now off my plate, but I still haven't tackled this really big project or this other thing that really needs to get done or this thing that this person's waiting for. You know, and so that's what I'm working towards. Okay, like just get better about blocking the time and getting the stuff done.
Yeah, there's a school of thought that, and I wish I was better at this too, where, you know, each morning, and I think this is an attempt at what you were doing with Kim, but each morning or the night before, you write down all of your to-do things, your list, big and small. It could be call mom. It could be, you know, buy eggs. It could whatever. And also map out, how much time do you think that that's going to take? And so it helps prioritize and maybe set blocks of time, because I've also heard in working, and I'm going to get the phrasing wrong, but like kind of block, like time blocks. So, all right, from 10 a.m. to 10:30, I am going to shut my email down, phone's on do not disturb, and I'm taking that 30 minutes. I'm going to knock out these little chunks of things I have to do, none of which take more than 5 minutes, but I don't want to do them. But if I could just block that time with zero distraction, then I can get them done.
That's exactly right. That's exactly the philosophy of it. And to your point of like putting everything in, like that you need to do for the day, there are a lot of people that say, just pick three. What are the most important three things that you have to get done the next day? The other thing I find is, I tell my colleague all the time, Have you ever heard the term clear the calculator?
No.
So it's like when
but that sounds like our generation.
Yeah, just like when you are, you know, going into a meeting or you need to work on that project, and I need to remember this more, but just taking a deep breath and or take three big deep breaths and clear the calculator for what, and the calculator being your brain, of whatever was in there that was, you know, all the things that were moving around and like different pieces and all you got to do this, all you got to do that, just clear the calculator and focus on what you're going to do. What I've told my colleague is I've gotten so good at clearing the calculator overnight while I'm sleeping that I wake up, I feel like every day is like 50 first dates. Do you remember that movie?
I do.
Where I'm like, I don't think there's anything important to do today. And then I get like in, you know, into the office or this, and it's like, oh my gosh, no, there's this. And you're like, okay, I've cleared my, I'm sleeping so well that my calculator is getting completely cleared. So it's really nice to have that already planned on a Friday for the week ahead, or on a Sunday, whatever day works for you, so that you can come in and go, oh yeah, no, I did clear my calculator last night, but I know what I need to do now.
I love that. I have an athletic coach, a company that I used to work for called Purple Patch, and I want to make sure I give them the credit for the branding of this. And he would call it the Sunday special. And again, it's essentially the same thing. And it's the way he would frame this up is every Sunday afternoon, take 30 or 40 minutes, whatever, however long it takes, and just look at your calendar for the week ahead. And first of all, prioritize the non-negotiables. Prioritize your work meetings that you can't get out of. Prioritize your children's athletic endeavors that you can't get out of, but probably wish you could. You know, schedule those in first.
Yep.
And then you have to sort of schedule in, okay, let's block in sleep. You know, you have to back up your calendar for enough sleep. And so those restorative practices, so if yoga is important to you, or if meditation is important to you, put it on the calendar. As ridiculous as that sounds, put it on there and give it a priority and make sure it stays on that calendar. Then and only then, really, what he would say is, then you schedule all of your workouts. And again, I'm framing this up from a triathlon training perspective because that was his world. And I think so many times we, at least in that world, we want to prioritize the workouts first. And we want to prioritize that because we think that's what's going to make us better and faster and more productive and stronger, to the detriment of all of these other life things, family, sleep, restorative practices that we have. And it's the opposite. I mean, it's like all of that training stuff and all of that, that should come last.
Yeah.
You know, only when you're well rested can you perform well.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. No, that is exactly what we were doing. The thing you just talked about. And my friend Stacy swears by doing it on Sunday. I struggle with Sunday because I've always kind of had that philosophy of give me my weekends, give me my Saturday and Sunday to completely check out from work. And I've always been concerned if I go in and look at my calendar that it starts my brain going and I'm like, oh, I need to do this. And I start getting the geared up, like the place I don't want to be on a Sunday afternoon. So I've kind of fought the Sunday thing, but it's the same. So what we were trying to, I actually kind of like Friday morning because then it gives you, okay, what do I need to finish today if I haven't, you know, this week? And then it gives you that view and allows you to kind of shut down for the weekend and then really enjoy your weekend.
Yes. So. And I think this is a great segue, Jill, to kind of like get into why I'm here.
Yeah.
And I'm turning down my headphones so I can actually hear us talk instead of hearing you through my headphones. But so you and I have known each other for 20-ish years.
23 years.
Yes.
Yes. I just had my 23-year anniversary of being in Austin.
And I've been here 25, almost 26 years now. And we met in the funniest of circumstances where at the time I was working for a radio station and I was hiring for marketing and promotion assistants. And you came in for an interview and we both realized, and you knew and I knew, that one, you were wildly over qualified for the job that I was hiring for at the time, and that two, we would be really good friends.
Right. Well, listen, I was doing a temp job, sleeping on a couch in the floor like of an office, my friend's house with four guys. So I was eager to get any kind of job to get me into a stable environment. So yes, okay. But I was super glad that we found things in common, and I said we should be friends.
Yes, and we have been, and our lives have taken many twists and turns through those 23 years, but I think we both have good Midwestern upbringings. I'm an Ohio girl. You're a Michigan girl. So I think we have that same sort of hard work ethic value. And that's what leads me to today. So your career over the past 20 plus years is generally in event planning, marketing for like tech. Talk a little bit about that career and where it led you, the pros and the cons, and the comforts that it has provided you. And then we want to segue into, let's forget about all of that and let's start a new business at mid-age.
So actually from college, the first 8 years of my career were spent in the recruiting MBAs to come work for the consulting companies that I worked for. And a lot of that was events. And so it kind of gave me that baseline experience of what it takes to host really nice events for people and putting together, you know, things that are impressive. Mm-hmm. And so I had that experience, moved to Austin, ended up working at the University of Texas for a few years, helping MBAs get jobs. And then after that, I transitioned and I really wanted to get into a marketing role. I was like, I want to do marketing. So I moved into, and much of what I had been doing to date was marketing. It was just in a different capacity. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up getting a role in a tech company in the field marketing area. So yes, doing a lot of events, leveraging those same skills I'd been using as a recruiter and a career advisor, you know, talking to people, getting to understand their needs, customer engagement, whether the customer is an MBA student or an employer looking to hire those students, or in my new role in tech, it could be a partner who wants to, you know, is looking to partner with us, or it could be a customer who's looking at like, why should I choose your technology over somebody else? So it was always that very personal face-to-face engagements, events. One of my most fun ones, I got to take customers to the Super Bowl.
How cool.
I did not actually get to go to the Super Bowl, but the customers did, but it was fine. It was fine. I was kind of happy. It was such an exhausting weekend. I was happy to put them on the bus and go have a glass of wine in the bar. So, so I did that. And, for many years was in field marketing from hardware to software companies, partner area. And, it was great experience. There were times when I absolutely loved it. And then I had my son and things really changed for me once I had him.
How old is Emmett now?
He's 8.
Yep.
And some background on that. So I worked for a tech company that had really encouraged us to read the book Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. And I know that there's a lot of controversy around that. I didn't catch the controversy as much as I focused. What Eric and I, my husband and I, took apart away from it was educated women are leaving the workforce in droves because they feel like they can't have it all. And my add-on to that is yes, because we only give people, not just women, but people, two choices. You can either work full-time or you don't work, and that there's just not enough in the gray. And then the other thing we took away from that book was it needs, when you have children, it needs to be 50-50. You cannot expect your wife to be a full-time employee, a full-time chef, a full-time taxi driver, you know, full-time laundry attendant. I mean, all the things that a parent does on top of a full-time job. And so that really spouses need to come alongside and share those responsibilities. So it was really great.
That's very progressive thinking too, at least from my upbringing,
yeah.
Which I would imagine is a lot of people who might be listening to this thinking, oh God, my parents weren't like that.
Oh no.
It was very traditional.
No. And ironically, my mom always worked in part-time roles after she had us. And so, yeah, so she would carry a lot of that responsibility. In fact, most of it. Mm-hmm. So we went into this whole parenthood thing with kind of, I felt like a really good head on our shoulders about it. And I came back from maternity leave and I was excited to get back and to say, you know, I was ready to re-engage my brain, be around people again. Mm-hmm. In fact, I even tried to like email them before I was supposed to come back and they were like, you have another week. We'll see you next week.
Whoa. So they were like, okay. Even they were like, chill out, sister.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I came back the week of Thanksgiving and I remember my VP saying, that's a weird, why are you doing that? It's a short week. Come back the week after. And I said, no. This is all very intentional. I want to come back at 3 days because I think that'll be a good kind of ease into things. Mm-hmm. But my first full week back, the week after Thanksgiving, I very quickly realized, oh, this 5-2 is way off. 5 days a week, work, 2 days at home. And it became very clear to me that I was paying somebody else. You know, we decided we were going to do a nanny versus mm-hmm. daycare. And I was paying this woman to be home with my child all day. And I was literally getting home at, you know, whatever, 5:30, 6, and having dinner, getting him to bed. And that was it. And I'm like, wait, I get like an hour and a half with him in the night and an hour in the morning. Like what? This is messed up.
And it's the non-fun time when you're exhausted on either end of that day. I mean, you're frazzled because you've got to get to work. And when you come home, you're frazzled because you've got to plan for the evening and getting him to bed and everything else. And so
yes.
What real enjoyment.
Yeah. Great times.
Is any of that.
Right. Yes.
And let me, was Eric, what, let me ask, like, why did you decide to go back to work? Was it a necessity
for
a two income household?
Oh yeah. Well, let's go back up to when we bought the house. Yeah. When we got married, we had the conversation of, if we decide to have children, this is a two income household. So you will need to go back to work, Jill. He's saying this to me. And
okay.
I said, absolutely. I cannot imagine not working. That is not in my DNA. I just don't foresee myself wanting to be a stay-at-home parent.
Right.
And he said, okay, cool. So here we are, fast forward a few years later. And I have this realization of, oh, I definitely want to work. I just don't want to work this many hours. I don't want to be away from him this many days. I want to be able to take him to postnatal yoga. It was something that we had done while I was on maternity leave, and I absolutely loved it. I loved being able to just go and take him, and I got yoga, and he got out, and it was just fun. And I was mm-hmm. like, I want to keep doing that. And that was on Wednesday mornings at, I don't know, 10 or something. So I worked for a small company, and that the CEO had actually said, hey, if you want to come back part-time or whatever, we can work with that. And I had joked with him, like, well, that sounds lovely, but our household budget can't afford that. So anyway, I get to the, after this first week, and said to my husband, I'd like to work 4 days a week. And we discussed, like, well, that's a 20% pay cut. That's going to take you back, you know, salary wise to where you were before you took this role. I think that's not a good idea, but never to be deterred. I thought, well, let's see. I could.
This is the Jill I know.
I'm like, okay, sounds good. in the back of my mind, I'm like, okay, what am I going to do next? I feel like Kylie Coyote. Why the coyote, right?
Yes.
Where I'm like, okay, I'm going to try again.
You're always scheming.
Yes, for good, not for evil. And so I came back and said, what about one day off every 2 weeks? And he said, oh, that's a 10% pay cut. I think that we can make that work. I think that works. So I worked it out with my HR and all the people that I needed to. There were some things going on behind the scenes. It took me some time to get some time with my direct manager. What ultimately ended up happening was they were in the process of going through a merger. And so my role ended up getting cut in half. So that was an awful day to come home and say, hi, remember how you didn't want me to take a 20% pay cut? Well, I've been given a 50% pay cut effective in 90 days. Mm. And so that was a hard moment.
Was this prior to the pandemic?
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. This was 2016.
Okay. So
four years
prior. Yeah.
I now have a 6-month-old and I'm still breastfeeding, and I'm now putting him to bed and getting online and looking for a new job because we couldn't afford for me to be 50%. And so I started doing interviews and trying to figure out what life was going to look like. And through that, I ended up, the 90 days came and I ended up going down to 20 hours a week. And I ended up, living this, half working mom, half stay at home mom life. Let's get involved in some moms groups. So I invited a moms group to come over, and they had all been hanging out with each other. So they're looking at me like, who are you and where did you come from? Like, literally, where did you come from?
We're supposed to invite you
to
our parties. Yeah.
And so we had, I had all these, basically strangers in my house and kids and all the things. And they did say, like, well, where did you come from? And I said, oh, well, I'm working part-time. My job got reduced and I'm working part-time. And they were, it was like the record stopped. It was like, And I could feel like all the heads of the moms turn towards me. And I'm like playing on the floor. And I'm like, what's happening? And I look and they're like, how did you get a part-time job? And I'm like, no, I didn't get it. It happened to me. And they're like, okay, but how? Like, where? Like, what did you do? And I'm just looking at their faces and I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And what I realized in that moment, or shortly after they left, was that here it felt like this horrible bad thing to me had happened, right? Because of where we were financially, we needed me to work full time or closer to it. Mm-hmm. But that what occurred to me was you have people, not everybody, but some number of people who are working full time and wish they were working less and had more time with their kids or their aging parents or whatever it is. And you have some people who have been at home that would like to get out just a little bit even and be able to use their brains and their experience and their, I shouldn't say, you use your brain a lot at home. But using their experience and their education and their skills, right? And so being out in the world and using all these things. And so that was just another kind of aha moment. In the process of my husband and I working through, okay, now what, right? What happens with this, your 50%? We had a head in the hands at the dining room table crying moment where I said, I wish we had spent less on this house so I could work less and do something I love.
Okay, so there's a trifecta here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you in that moment, I say that again here so I can absorb that. You ultimately, you wish you would have spent less.
Mm-hmm. So I could work less.
So you could work less.
And do something I love.
Enjoy life more.
Because all I could see was this path of this like dark road of like, okay, I'm going to have to go get another tech job, doing software marketing, doing something I'm not passionate about, but pays really well. And so that I can afford this house, and I'm going to have to continue to pay somebody to take care of my kid, whether it's daycare or nanny or whatever the scenario is. And I just was like, is this it? Is this really it? Right? Is this what life is about?
It sometimes feels that way, I think, for a lot of families.
Yeah.
It's just the vicious cycle of earning money so that we can just spend money.
Yes. So we can keep up with the lifestyles that we've signed ourselves up for.
Mm.
And so
that hurts.
Sorry.
That one hit.
Well, and I started looking at some of my friends and seeing this cycle in their life, right? Like, I have this big job and I have to travel and I missed their soccer game and I had to do all this, but I came back and I brought them this from my trip. And then we're going to go on this really expensive trip that I'm taking on because I feel really bad that I missed their soccer game. Oh, now I have to work really hard to pay for that vacation that I did. And it's this cycle and that I see so many of us doing. And one of the things I also noticed at this time was my son is, you know, growing up, obviously. And I'm like, the thing he wants from me the most is not a new toy. It's not a new vacation. It's my dedicated time, eye to eye, no phones, no devices. Let's just hang out and be together at time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, gosh, we're like showering these kids with toys and guilt gifts and guilt vacations when all they really want is us. They just want our time mm-hmm. and our attention. And so it was just all these, it was like epiphany after epiphany after epiphany.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of a midlife crisis, if you will.
Yeah. And I had my kiddo late in life. So yeah, so it truly was, I mean, maybe not hopefully like exactly mid, because right. I'd like to go a little bit longer than that.
Yeah, you were early 40s.
I was early 40s. That's right. Yeah. So from that was born this concept of better balance. From that moment of, I wish that we had spent less so I could work less and do something I love and have more time with my kiddo and not have regrets. And so I ended up ultimately having to get another corporate job. And I did that full time until I went to visit a friend in Colorado. And I was sharing this idea with her of, you know, I don't know what this is yet. I don't know if this is a business or a mission, or I don't know what this is. And she just looked at me. And at the time I was, you know, working my full-time corporate job. I was a stylist for the fashion brand Cabby and had this concept in my head. And she just looked at me across the table and she's like, you're going to need to quit one of your jobs. Like, you need to go do whatever this is. And but you can't do three. You will lose your mind.
Yes.
I came back from that trip and I said, Eric, I think I want to quit my corporate job. And he was like, you're never going to Colorado by yourself again.
No.
So
potent gummies.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that was November of 2018. I quit my corporate job in June of 2019. With the idea of I'm going to focus on launching Better Balance and doing my role as a stylist. And then the pandemic, you know, kind of threw everything off a little bit. And all of a sudden I was a pre-K teacher for a short while. And that was horrible. I'm not meant to do that job.
I did not know that.
Well, because Emmett was home and he was four and he was in pre-K. And so all of a sudden I was like, oh, girl, great. I'm now a pre-K teacher. Oh. It was actually funny. After school got out, we were in a blanket fort. And Emmett had run upstairs to get something. And it was just me and my husband in the blanket fort waiting for him to come back. And he said, you seem so much happier. And I said, yeah, you know, I know why? Because I'm not meant to be a pre-K teacher. And because we were in summer mode. And I said, you know what else I'm not meant to be? A kindergarten teacher. And so I was like, yeah, we need to make sure whatever we do, he is in school come the school.
Yeah.
So
better balance.
Yeah.
Balance. So in your brain at that time in 2018, 2019, it was essentially a thought. It was a mission statement. And it was trying to connect these three thoughts that you'd had of, I'm sick of, you know, working too hard. And so that I can buy things and realizing that none of it's really making me happy or satisfied. Yeah. I mean, and then that connected the dots with, let's say, this parent group that you had met up with, and these predominantly women who at that time were out of the workforce, but some of them were going, I sure wish that I could find some part-time work that maybe uses, as you said, uses their education and their skills and perhaps their previous experience from working, and you're like, okay, I have this knowledge of recruitment and connecting people with jobs. I have this goal. And so how did it start to congeal that this is what Better Balance was going to try to become?
Oh my gosh. It's been a journey for sure. So there was a gentleman, I was working on my computer on a Sunday morning while Emmett was in Sunday school and I was downstairs working, doing something. I don't even remember. And this ended up talking to a guy there who...
Were you at church?
I was at church. Okay. Oh yeah. I was downstairs in the church. He was upstairs in Sunday school and I had my laptop and I don't remember what I was working on. But I ended up talking to him and telling him about the concept and saying, hey, I've got this idea and I don't know what it is, and da, da, da. And he referred me to another gentleman who has been just really instrumental in helping me figure this out. And it was exactly 2 years ago. We were on the road to drive to Colorado for spring break. And I had my first call with Charlie, and Charlie was like, yeah, I'm like, I don't know if this is a mission or a business. He's like, it sounds like it's kind of like a movement. I said, yeah. How do you get paid for that? Because I have a mortgage, so I need to make money. So I always call that the 4 M's conversation, right? Is it a mission? Is it a movement? I need to make money because I have a mortgage, right? So, and so he's really helped me, over the last 2 years, kind of take this concept and say, okay, what if you just start matching people? And at first I was like, matching people with what? I don't know. What? And ironically, I've been doing this almost my whole life, just very organically, like, oh, you need a veterinarian? Oh, I know someone who's a veterinarian. And oh, like, I love to connect people. I love to help. Or like, oh, I'm looking for a new job. Oh, well, let me think about who I need. Let me make intros. And I think a lot of that is rooted in the fact that people really helped me over the years, right? Just like you and I, when we met in 2001, right? And like, oh, this is not the right job for you, but go talk to these three people or these, whatever. Just how helpful others have been to me in my career made me want to be helpful to give that back to others. It just started coming together that this is what we should do. One other thing I should note is we moved away from the spending less and working less idea, and our tagline now is work smart, spend smart, do what you love. And what I also realized was they're actually tied to three things that had a really influential impact on my life. The Work Smart was the Lean In book. Mm-hmm. The Spend Smart was Financial Peace University, which is Dave Ramsey's program that helped us get on a budget, helped me pay off, I think it was $60,000 of debt that I had brought to the marriage. My husband was like, I knew I should have done a background check on you.
Is that what the tsunami warning in Hawaii was at your reception?
Exactly.
And that's another story. That's a different story
for a different time. Yeah. And then the third tenet of Do What You Love is a book that was really inspired. I mean, when the thought came to me, and then I realized how it tied to these other things, it was a book called The Me I Want to Be by John Ortberg. And he really talks about, are you flourishing or are you languishing in the work that you're doing? And what I found was when I was doing my corporate job, I would sit at my desk, kind of slumped down, like blah, blah, blah. And then when I would turn to my personal computer on my lunch hour and do things for Cabbie, I would sit up straight. I was excited. I was smiling. I mean, my whole body language changed. And that was when I realized, I'm like, oh my gosh, I am languishing in this role and I'm flourishing here. And I want this flourishing for all of my work. And I want that for others as well. And so that kind of ties in. So those three resources, if you will, have kind of bolstered this concept. So yeah, over the course of the last 2 years, we've really just kind of been doing the things, right? Like let's get the website going. Let's, you know, oh, let's do some blog posts and let's do this. And then last year I started getting out and networking, right? As like the world started going out into the world more. Mm-hmm. I started networking and talking to people and meeting people. And before I knew it was just kind of the same snowball thing that, you know, this person led to this person. And next thing I knew it was, hey, can you help us find somebody for this role? And I literally had just met someone at church that I was like, oh, she'd be perfect for that. Within a week, that was our first match.
I was just going to ask you if you could remember back to your first actual match and how it came together. Obviously, it was very organic.
Oh, absolutely.
And based on personal connection only, there was no marketplace. There was no thing that people submitted their CVs and
resumes. The marketplace.
The marketplace. Yes. Yeah. And so dig into that, if you will, a little bit more about this first connection that you made that was successful.
Yeah. So it was actually a referral from my friend Teresa, who has a recruiting firm and they focus on full time. And so when she met me and she learned that I wanted to really build out the opportunities for people to work less than 40 hours a week, she was like, oh, that's amazing. We don't do that. But I sometimes run into employers who want that or candidates who want that. And so she said, I'll send them your way. I said, okay, great. Well, if we find people who want full time, we'll send them to you, because that's not where we're going to specialize. So, So the first employer was a company called Access College America. They're here in Austin, Texas, and they help high school students get into college. And they needed somebody to kind of be like an inside sales type role where you're following up on leads. And I had literally just been in a Bible study with my friend Barbie, and she said, I'm looking for a job. And she said, ideally I'd like part-time. And I said, afterwards, I was like, you know what I do for work. Like, I'm trying to do this, I'm trying to help people like you. And she's like, oh, that's great. So this job came along, Barbie came along. It's just the timing was within weeks or days of each other. It was crazy. And so he literally from like, hey, can you go find us this person, to Barbie getting an offer was 1 week.
Unbelievable.
It was crazy. It was amazing. And then we've since helped, you know, a Westlake-based accounting firm find a part-time bookkeeper. We've done three matches since the beginning of the year. We're working on more. Like, it's starting, the momentum is really starting to pick up. And it's all, we aren't even doing any marketing yet. We don't even have an email campaigns yet.
Yes. So I love it. I love this proof of concept that you have just honestly, based on your personality and your personal connections alone, which was a great start and got the ball rolling and, you know, got better balance up and running. And now it is a viable business, but now you have to put some systems in place. Yeah. And now you've got to figure out how to really monetize this thing in a professional way, as opposed to being like, hey, Charlie, you're going to give me 10% of that. I mean, like, whatever, right. Whatever it was. Where does it stand now? So how are you then scaling this?
Yes.
So that hundreds, if not thousands, of businesses and applicants can submit to you.
Oh, absolutely. So one of the first things that we learned from, Charlie was our first mentor. We now have several that have been mentoring us. And one of the first things that they said was, you've got to stop saying part-time.
And interesting.
I was super offended by that, because I was like, what do you mean? That's how people refer to it. And they're like, it's from an employer perspective, it has a very negative connotation. And my friend Kirsten had already told me that, and I was resistant. I was like, okay. And so that was one of the first things we had to really work on, is what's the nomenclature. Okay. And so we have adopted the term flex employee and we have basically said, to us, in a better balanced world, that means someone who works less than 40 hours a week. And so we don't use that term part-time really anymore out in the marketplace or on our website. But what's funny is candidates get it. When you're talking to a candidate, it's part-time, part-time, part-time. They get it. When you're talking to an employer, the feedback was, it sounds like something you do, like, I have a part-time job, like when you're in high school or college. Like,
I see that.
It's not taken seriously. It's actually the opposite of what you find with flex employees. People who work as flex employees and have this opportunity, and I meet people all the time who do this. It's happening more than people think, but it's not easy to find. It's not easy to create. You have to create it within your employer, or you have to find an employer that values it and will give you that opportunity. But when I talk to these people, I mean, they've been in these roles 3, 5, 7 years, right? Because they're not going anywhere. They have exactly the life they want. They get to do a job for whatever it might be, 15, 20, 25, 30 hours a week. And then they get to pick their kids up from school, or they get to take their aging parents to the doctor, or they're going to their own schooling and don't have to squeeze it in at nights and weekends, you know, whatever it might be. Or some people, like one person's like, I just want to play tennis three times a week from, you know, 8 to 10, and not feel guilty about it or feel like I have to make up the hours on the back end. You know, so there's so many reasons that people want and need this. And so that was the first thing, was nomenclature, flex employee. What was the other question? Oh, how are we scaling? Yes. So, as we really are starting to pick up momentum, we are also looking at where we can really specialize and have an impact. One of the things that we've seen over the last year is, and learned, is that there is a big need in the accounting industry. Over 300,000 accountants have left the industry since the pandemic. And evidently, as I talk to more accounting firms and understand more about this crisis, this has been going on for about 8 years. Just people, whether it's retiring or people just getting burnt out and leaving, or, you know, wanting to have time for those other things. And the option is not there to work less than 40 hours. It's from, with most firms, it's, you know, 60 miles an hour or zero. Mm. There's not a lot in the 30 mile an hour zone, as I like to call it. And so we're really looking at, how can we help that industry? How can we bring back some of these 300,000 people that have left, and to say, hey, if you could do this job 25 to 30 hours a week, rather than doing it 50 or 60, would you come back? Would you consider that? And then really working with employers and CPA firms to say, listen, instead of that one 50 or 60 hour person, why don't you hire 2 25 or 30 hour people? They get the life they want. You get the work done that you need. So that's what we're really, where we're looking at as we can have an impact over, you know, the next couple of years, is where we can really focus in. And so
that, it gives people, first of all, it gives people autonomy. If they do job share, if that's a phrase that's used anymore. I know back when I worked in radio, when we had some job share situations with two people carrying one list of accounts, that's what we called it. We called it job sharing.
But absolutely.
Which was great, because it gave them autonomy and it gave them the flexibility that they wanted. I love, love, love that, and I want to hone in on this just a little bit, is that you are narrowing your focus. So you're trying to go a mile deep. What do they say? An inch wide and a mile deep into a specific industry, instead of being wide in your net casting, but not going very deep.
Yes. And this is very hard for me, because I want to help everybody who wants this. So I'm struggling with this, but I know it's the right thing to do, because I keep hearing it from so many people. And Charlie, bless his heart, is like, I know you want to help everyone. He's like, the best way for you to help everyone is to start by helping a small segment, get really good at that, and then go expand. I heard a great analogy recently with a class I took. It was basically how we landed at Normandy. Mm-hmm. Right. So the military was, you know, the German defenses were all up and down the coast of France. And but there was this one spot where there weren't as many. And so we could have come in, the Allies could have come in and try to hit all of the coast and put all of their resources kind of, you know, in a band to attack the whole coast. And we probably would have lost. Versus taking all of their forces and going in at this one small little section and doing really well, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. basically land and expand.
Love that. Land and expand. God, what a great takeaway from this episode for anyone who is trying to think of anything new in life, you know, and doesn't think that they can do it. Just land in one spot, get to know it well, and then expand. What a great lesson. And it sounds like, I mean, that is the theme of the whole better balance thing, because you, as a full-time working mom who had your full-time tech job and you were working at Cabbie on the side and trying to raise a son, like you were basically casting your net so wide that you weren't achieving any happiness. I mean, it was just the rat race. And so I think that inherently the way we do business is the way we should live our life, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And yeah, try to be as focused as possible. So now, kind of getting back to that nitty gritty, is there a portal? Like, have on the website you developed a portal?
Oh, absolutely. Oh yeah. No, that's been live for a long time. 2 years, actually.
Okay.
So it's been great. So that was one thing we did pretty early on. So yes, if you go to betterbalancedlife.com/candidates, you can learn about how to become one of our candidates. We do pride ourselves on really getting to know our candidates. We want to understand why they're looking to be a flex employee, what kind of hours are they looking to work? What kind of days? Like, there are certain restrictions, right? I've met people who are like, I want to have Wednesdays off so I can put all my doctor's appointments and all my mom's doctor's appointments on Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. And I could just focus that day. And I was, okay, that's interesting, right? So everyone has different needs. But so we can really understand them. And then we can really work with our employers to make sure we get them the right match.
Yeah,
That's one of the things that's really, really important to us is it the right match? And we use that term all the time. Like, we want to be matchmakers, which I understand. Again, I didn't come from an industry recruiting background. I had those, years where I was a campus recruiter, but very different than industry recruiting. And so I understand that that's something unique. I'm learning myself as I go down this road, but it's really important to us. We don't want, it gives flex employment a bad name if someone leaves after 3 months, right? So we want someone to go and be there for a long time. And so we're really making sure that we get that right match. And I think that's really a testament to what we're doing. You know, my colleague Melanie talks to all of our candidates. She's got a background in recruiting for a major French company. So she knows how to learn from people what their values and their priorities are. And that then gets translated in our matching.
Yeah. And a couple of other lessons I want to draw out from today's conversation, just in life for anyone who might be contemplating a career change or a life change of any sort, is that you touched on it already. You have mentors in place. You mentioned Charlie a few times. Your husband, maybe perhaps not a mentor, but a supporter. And I like that the two of you have very pragmatic conversations about the needs of your household. And it puts things in perspective quickly. And it allows you to dream big, but also hustle.
Yeah,
because there are real needs that need to be met. So you touched on mentors. You also touched a little bit on this continuing education and networking aspect of your job. You and I have tried to schedule this a couple of times. Once I had to bail for another work project, but you've also had some, like, I've got to go, I've got like 45 minutes and then I have to go like speak at this thing, or then I'm going to this luncheon, or like, so you are out there hustling and networking. And so how important has that been in just continuing education, taking classes, joining organizations?
I mean, we wouldn't be where we are if I wasn't out there talking to people. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely. There's a group called the Vistage Group who's been, Dick runs a group and been very, very supportive. I mean, amazing knowledge I've learned from that group. As well as just people who've been really helpful. We've actually now put together an advisory board. And many of those people on the advisory board are people I met at Vistage. I also attend, a few things around town. I mean, there's so many things you could do depending on what you do. What I have found, and true to Austin nature, is I found that most people here want to help you be successful. And it is one of my favorite things about living in Austin, Texas, is that I think it's a place where you can be whatever you want to be. People are very accepting. How can I help you get where you're trying to go? Maybe that's just been my good luck, but
my face has changed the second you say that, because I have a dear friend, Kippy, who I run with, and she is a listener of this podcast. So she'll smile when she hears her name on it.
because she is a mentor and an advisor to students in college. And she has said the exact same thing because she's been in Austin for almost 30 years and went to UT. And, you know, like she has been in this town for a long time. And she has said that exact same thing, that in general, Austin is a great place to be because people want to help other people still. Absolutely. So to hear you say that, just actually, it warmed my heart because I'm becoming the old curmudgeon who's gotten all crusty about Austin.
No, you're not. I mean, you know, it's hard to be helpful when you're sweating your butt off in August. But no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No one's happy.
One other thing I wanted to circle back to really quick. So while we are going to focus on helping the accounting industry, we are also implementing the 80-20 rule. So 80% of our efforts are going to be on that, and the other 20% are going to be on
new industry, different industry.
Exactly. We've also gotten a lot of traction with administrative roles. And that works really well with a lot of our candidates. A lot of our candidates are people who've left the workforce, some for up to 17 years. They're like, so 17 years ago I worked at, you know, Dell. Can I do anything with that? And like, yeah, but let's talk about what you've been doing the last 17 years. You ran that fundraiser. You've been the VP at the PTA. You've done this, you've done that. Like, so many of these people are working, quote unquote, they're just not getting paid. They're doing these volunteer jobs that are requiring them to, you know, run a budget, track things in Excel, meet deadlines, like all these things that are required in so many jobs. And so we so often talk to our candidates and we look at their resume and we'll help with their resume if they need it. But employers will sometimes go, well, they don't have that experience. And we're like, don't worry, just meet them. And they do. And they meet them and they're like, oh my gosh, they're amazing. And I was like, yeah, I know. Just trust us. We have gotten to know these people and then we get to know you. And we're only going to match you with people that we think are going to be a good fit. It was a real quick story. There was a woman I was helping recently. She hired a marketing assistant, mm-hmm. and I sent her one resume, and she said, after talking to this candidate, I said, oh my gosh, you're going to be perfect. This is going to be absolutely perfect for like what she needs and what you do is going to be perfect. And the employer said, so can I get a couple more resumes? Is it just this one? And I said, yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm out of town right now, but I'll get you some more resumes, but I really think you're going to like her. She's like, okay, no problem. Sounds great. We're meeting tomorrow. So Monday I get back into town and I'm like, Anne, I'm getting ready to send you those resumes. And she's like, no, Jamie starts on Thursday.
Don't bother.
I was like, I knew it. I told you were going to love each other. It was just a perfect match. And it's going swimmingly. They both are really happy. So we're thrilled.
I love to hear that, Jill, because there's still this method of intuition that you are employing in this job. And there is this personal satisfaction that you're getting every time you make a connection. I mean, like, I see it in your face right now. It's like you're not just spitting algorithms into a computer and then it, you know, six resumes spit out and say, here are some candidates you should consider. It's like, oh no, I've met her. I know her children. I know, you know, like, I know her work ethic. She would be great. Like, I love that there's still this intuitiveness about what you're doing for both the employee and the employer. I also love that you have set Better Balance up as a real effing business. Yeah. This isn't just your side hustle to do because you're bored or because you need, like, you know, a little bit of money.
Bored. I don't even know what it's like to be bored.
Who does? I mean, poof. But case in point, I came to your office. Mm-hmm. Today, it's just you. You do have a colleague that you work with, but it was wildly important for you to get an office space so that you could leave your home every day and leave the laundry, and that you can take care of that later.
Yes.
And come to work. Mm-hmm. Why was that important to you? And B, do you think that that's necessary for people to consider or to think through if they're starting their own thing?
I think it's what I'm learning as I talk to lots of people about this, I definitely think it's a person by person thing. Some people work very well at home and they're very efficient and that's great. I once saw a t-shirt that said, I don't have ADD. Oh, look, there's a chicken. And I laughed when I saw it and I thought, oh, huh, maybe there's something there. But I when I work from home, it's like, I feel like my my running to-do list of the house is just mocking me. Like I'll go down to refill my water and I'm like, oh, the dishwasher needs to be emptied and oh, the laundry could be switched over. Oh, it'll just take me 3 minutes to do that. But again, it's death by 3 minutes. It's death by 5 minutes. And so, you know, I'll get an hour later, I've now reorganized the pantry, but I haven't, you know, called that employer back. And so for me, I just have to get out of that space so that when I can come to the office, I can focus on the office. And when I'm at home, I really try not to do work. Like home is the place to be home. Home is where I engage with my family and where I cook and I do laundry and, you know, those things. And I really try to keep them separate. I mean, every once in a while, like, you know, I'll need to do something for work, but in general, I try to leave it at the office. There are even some days I leave my laptop here.
What? That is like panic inducing. Oh my God.
I know.
That's like running without my Garmin.
I know, right?
No.
Yes. Like I will leave, I'll like think about my night. I'm like, okay, I'm going to this meeting or I have this going on. There's nothing I need to get online for tonight. I don't have any other thing. So, I can leave my laptop.
Don't you have like a backup or something?
I know, right? I'm like, well, remember, I do live 5 minutes from the office. So if I really need to, I can come back. But there's this freedom that I have. I'm like, oh, it reminds me. I feel like I'm in like 2002 again.
Yes.
Or 2003, whatever year that was when I worked at UT and I had a desktop.
Yes. Yes. And a phone that didn't ding at you every 5 seconds with Slack and email and texts and news. Oh my gosh.
So yes, for me, the office is very instrumental. I absolutely love it. I walk in and I just feel like I'm ready to get stuff done.
I like that.
And it just keeps me focused and I can just, it's become my happy place. And I have lots of, you know, inspirational quotes and things to, you know, remind me.
Yeah.
Stay focused.
As I show up.
Right.
No. Divert that focus.
Yeah.
No, I think that's great. And, you know, whether or not you have an office in your home or whether or not you get an office or if you even need an office, I think the point is to set your endeavor up like a business when you're ready to make that launch. You didn't do it right away.
No.
How long have you had this office space?
It'll be 1 year in April 1st.
Okay. So, you know, the business had been going.
Yes.
And up and running.
We had been working from my dining room table and then that evolved into going to our public library. Mm-hmm. So if anyone has, you know, lives in a town where their public libraries have meeting rooms, ours do. And then if I didn't need a meeting room, you could just also go and work at, you know, in a quiet space. Again, for me, I really like having just a clean space with no stacks of mail, no, you know, dishes that need to be dried, like looking at me, whatever. Yeah. So I love getting out of their space. I would go to Whole Foods, I would go to coffee shops, but then it got where I'm like, okay, I have to go to the bathroom. What do I like? Hey guy, will you watch my stuff while I go to the bathroom? Yeah. So I have to pack it all up. And then you have that moment of like, I hope you're trustworthy. I don't know. Who are you? Like, what are you doing? Let me look at your computer and see what you're doing. See if I should trust you. And then I'd look and be like, well, his computer's nicer than mine. So I'm sure I'm fine.
You're fine.
I just got to a point where I was like, I can't keep bouncing around like this. I need to get to a place where I can. But I was leaving the house every day for probably 6 months before I got the office. I just had to get out of the house.
Yeah. Okay.
For me.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's great. And so, you know, obviously there are real hard costs to starting something when you don't have money coming in. And how have you and your partner, Mr. Eric, how have you guys reconciled that? I know that you still do work with Cabby and you still, you know, so you still have an income stream.
Sure.
But these real conversations that you were having just a few short years ago about we need two incomes, that hasn't changed. You're still in the same house.
Yeah.
And now you have a son who like wants to be in sports and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
it's not like costs have declined.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So how are you reconciling that?
So
without getting into too much.
Of course. So I think one of the biggest things that I'm super grateful for is well, my faith, first of all, mm-hmm. leads everything mm-hmm. and has been at the core of this from the beginning. I really felt like this was something that God has called me to do. I can look back now and see the whole journey and go, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I had to have that $60,000 in debt to know what it feels like and what it feels like to pay that off. Oh, I needed to get laid off twice, so know how that feels. And oh, I needed to, you know, leave my kid 40 hours a week so I can know how that feels. Like everything, I can look back and see that it led to this moment and to what I'm doing right now. Yeah. And so one of the things I really feel like God has really shown up is in my husband's job. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. in the time since 2019 when I quit, which I cannot believe we're coming up on 5 years, his job has really taken care of him.
Okay, great.
Financially. And great. So that has really helped us to stay afloat.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's been stressful. I won't lie. It's been stressful. And it's a challenge, and it's something that, you know, we're constantly looking at and taking, you know, taking, you know, inventory on, you know, where are we with things. But I really, there's something when I quit and I said, when I quit my corporate job and I said, I think that I can really, you know, blow out my business with Cabbie if I just focus on it. And it was going well. I mean, I was really focused on it. It was great, but we weren't blowing it out. Mm-hmm. And one day he looked at me and I said, I thought if I really focused on it, I could do that. And he said, I think if you really focused on better balance, that you could blow out. And so that really was that whole like shift and really hearing like someone believes that in me and believes in this concept, that really, you know, kind of was a pivot point for us too in our relationship. And there have been times, I won't lie, there are times where I'm like, do I need to go back to a corporate job? And he's like, nope, you just stay the course. You keep doing what you're doing. And I really think that both of us feel like this is exactly where God wants us. Mm. And it to me, it's evidenced in these matches that just keep happening organically, right? And like, every time we're like, okay, well, now what? There's another one, and there's another one. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is just starting to happen. And this is so exciting. And Melanie is my colleague, and we're just thrilled to see it starting to really take off. We do talk about like, okay, well, what happens if this like really takes off? Like to your question, yeah. Like how do we really scale this?
Yeah.
And so we're always, you know, trying to think about how do we scale this, but we don't ever want to lose the personal touch. We don't ever want to go to, you know, algorithms and things like that. I mean, Eric's always like, well, how are you going to use AI? And I'm like, I'm working on that. We don't want to lose the personal touch of getting to know that we know our candidates, we know our employers, because we think that that's what makes us really unique. Right. In addition to, you know, bringing people into the workforce who have left and want to be in it. And then also for the people who are already in the workforce and are pulling their hair out, trying to juggle all the things, whether it's their full-time job and their kids and their aging parents and volunteer activities and all the things, and say, okay, I would like to scale back to 25 or 30 hours or whatever, and to allow that person an opportunity to do so. So it's a two-pronged approach. We're really trying to educate employers. You know, people want and need this, and we would love for you to consider that and to figure out who in your organization needs that. And then we can help you fill that gap, right? So if that person wants to scale back 15 hours and they're a, you know, marketing manager, I have a marketing manager who wants to work 15, 20 hours a week, and she would be thrilled to come and meet with you. And so those are the types of matches, and that's the impact we want to have. We want to help the people who are working full-time get to something that's full-time and full-time plus, yep. Let's face it,
yep.
And get to something that works for their life and their budget. And then we want to help those who, you know, may have stepped out of the workforce and are itching to come back in.
Mm. So. That you've just expressed so much excitement for the future. What scares the hell out of you?
Oh, like an influx of 50,000 candidates.
That's a good fear.
Yeah.
Fear.
No, I mean, just, It's funny. I don't even consider, you know, people are like, oh, 85% of small businesses fail and blah, blah, blah. It's not even an option for me. Like failure is just not even really, it's not even on the radar. So that's not one of my fears. I always tell people, I'm like, I'm not a serial entrepreneur. This is it. This is my baby. And if it doesn't work out, I'll be knocking on someone's door in corporate. But this is something that I'm so passionate about. And I just really think the world needs. So what scares me is the scaling, right? So how do we grow in a way that's smart and, but maintains the values of, you know, better balance and what we're trying to do. But I mean, I would love for anybody and everybody who wants to work less than 40 hours a week to have that opportunity. I would love for it not to be, you know, have the stigma that it does. And for employers to recognize these people are smart, they're educated, they're loyal, they're motivated. The research shows that they're more efficient, more productive, you know, and so there's just a lot of goodness.
One more practical question and then I'll wrap it up. But you know, you're right behind you in this office. There are three whiteboards because that's mandatory in every office, in every entrepreneur's office. And there's just a whole lot of stuff on these boards that make zero sense to me, you know, percentages and pyramids and lists and stuff and, you know, very important things. How, from a practical standpoint, Jill, right now in this phase of the business that you're in with Better Balance, how do you structure your day?
Oh, that's a great question. And it takes us back to the beginning with, you know, yep. how do you plan your day?
Yeah.
So, typically, it really depends on the day. So Melanie and I work together Tuesdays and Thursdays, and we both try to really live out the principles of Better Balance and work less than 40 hours a week. So Melanie's here Tuesday, Thursdays, and so we really make those days our work together days. So what do we need to do? You know, it's our two brain days, as okay. the term goes. There's some of the job sharing people call that. Sometimes in job sharing, you have a day that overlaps, yes. and it's the two brain day.
Yes.
So we have that where we might work on, you know, what is the next, you know, what's our big initiative we're working on right now? Is it, we just did a veto exercise that an advisory board member gave us, which is understanding, you know, your values and then what are your goals? What's your 10-year goal? What's your 3-year? What's your 1 year? And what do you need to do for the next 90 days? So we just went through that exercise and it really helped us to really hone in on, okay, this is the priority for the next 90 days and let's go. And then identifying owners. And so we did that. Sometimes it's okay, we're going to dig in on one of those things. How are we going to let employers know that we're doing this? How do we let candidates know? You know, so it may be, we're going to spend a couple hours talking and doing the work about reaching out to candidates. There's also, so those are Tuesdays and Thursdays. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, is typically my day to get, like, to kind of start cranking through that to-do list of, yeah. oh, okay, where are we? You know, up here is our, yeah. you know, our pipeline. So where are we with this candidate and that employer? Where are we, you know, how are things going with that situation? Mm-hmm. And so following up on some of those things, and, you know, where are things in process? There's also things as the CEO that I'm like, okay, I need to talk to, review the document from the lawyer. I need to send our forecast to this guy on the advisory board who's our CFO. He wants to see our forecast for the year. You know, there's like all these running the business things that mm-hmm. happen mm-hmm. that need to get, you know, prioritized.
And then there's the whole marketing side, which is where the paralysis I think can sometimes set in because now you're like, okay, well, we have this website, but like, how do we market the website? How do we build SEO? Should I be on TikTok? Do right. I need to be doing Instagram? Should yes. I start a podcast? Should oh, I have yeah. a YouTube channel? Like all that, it's all that, you know,
yeah.
frightening, overwhelming stuff where most of us, myself included, get stuck in the paralysis of it.
Yes. So we were trying to do all that. In fact, one of the things that you don't see is where it was our social media strategy. Because quite frankly, our advisory board was like, no, stop. You don't need to do that right now. You need to focus in on where you're going to focus, and then you need to go market in that way, right? Market to that audience. Don't just market to anybody and everybody, even though we know you want to help everybody. You need to start really focusing your marketing efforts. And I was like, okay. So it was kind of a nice to just kind of take that off our plate and say, okay, we're not going to worry about that right now. We're going to get really clear on how do we help this accounting industry? What does that mean? What kind of things do we need to know? What kind of groups do we need to get in touch with? I'm really also just trying to talk to people who've left the industry. I'd like to talk to people who are in the industry. We're really just doing a lot of kind of informational meetings too. So that's kind of been tabled for right now, which is kind of nice because there's investments in that that where I was just about to do like, oh, we need an email system and we need a CRM. And I'm like, oh, you know what? Yeah, no, we don't need to do that. We can just do everything on Google like we have been.
Right.
I will say there was something you had asked me about. Oh, I had the
fears. There were, was it?
No, right. The fear about question. The, networking. So there, and then the day is also, you know, sprinkled in, you know, hey, can you talk to this person? You know, people make connections. And yeah, absolutely. Happy to have a conversation with somebody who's a candidate or looking for this, or maybe they're looking for full-time, but just want to talk to somebody who's in the world. And, you know, and so those get sprinkled into the week as well. But it's busy. It's really busy. And,
is it fair to say that you're, you know, building the plane as you're flying it?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no. When we made our first match, we were like, so we are like taking off. We don't have landing gear. We not even sure we have a like GPS system. Like, yeah, I mean, we absolutely felt like that. I think we're starting to feel a little bit less like that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Oh, absolutely. We're totally building the plane.
You might be buckled in at this point, but
no, I'm not even sure. No, I think we're kind of like running up and down the aisle.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so parting advice then, I think, which is sort of how I want to end it, from somebody who is going through it right now. If somebody out there is thinking of doing something that they have been fearful of doing, but really, really, really speaks at their heart and soul, what advice do you have? And you've shared so much of it, but to me, like a theme that keeps coming up over and over again is, you know, find people that will support and believe in you that may or may not be involved in the daily minutia of the business. You know, sometimes it's better when they're not, when they can advise from the outside looking in, and not being afraid to just start digging in.
That would be one, it's kind of multi-point here. If there is something that's kind of in your heart, they're like, oh, I've always wanted to do it. Don't ignore that would be my first advice. Don't ignore it. Go figure out if it's something. Number two, just do something. Whether it's, I mean, I still remember when I bought the domain betterbalancelife.com because betterbalance.com wasn't available. So I wasn't thrilled, but I was like, oh, we'll take it. And since then people are like, oh, I like it. It makes sense. I'm like, okay, great. So I bought betterbalancelife.com and I remember I texted my neighbor and was like, Rebecca, I bought a domain. And she was like, oh, great. Like, but it was such a big step for me to be like, I'm doing this. Like, I'm going to do this some way, somehow. And I don't know yet what this is going to be, but I'm going to at least buy a domain. So my advice would be do something, take one step, write one blog post, talk to one person about it. Start like, do, you know, like the quote on my March calendar was the one about, you know, you walk 1,000 miles by taking the first step or whatever it is. It's not it, but something like that.
Yeah.
So that would be my advice is just take one step and don't be perfect. Don't try to be perfect. Our first go at the website was not perfect. We keep adding tabs. Like we're not, you know, we're like, it does. I think people get really hung up on it has to be perfect. And it's like, no, just do something. Mm-hmm. Done is better than perfect.
And that's honestly, for having known you for a couple of decades, like that's a shift in you because you're a perfectionist and a bit of a, and I mean this in the most positive way, but a bit of a control freak, which is a bad word. But, you know, when we had coffee a month or so ago, I shared with you a story I remember of like before your son was born, like you had his you know, childhood planned out, you know, and you're like,
don't even remember
when
that
I
now.
Have a boy, because you were like, this is like, I will have a boy. You know? When I have a boy, I'm going to, you know, and you had like basically your life structured and his life structured. And I've never had a child. And so I'm like,
sure about that?
Right? And it's so funny because I don't even have that memory. I'm like, I don't even remember that. Who is that girl?
You wanted to plan out every piece of the timing of, you know, being pregnant versus, you know, I need to be pregnant in between now and now. I'm like, do you get to decide that?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely not. And that's the thing that I do remember saying, well, I'm going to have my first child by the time I'm 30. When then 30 came and went and I was not even, you know, I think in a relationship. Yeah. Oh, I think I was. But,
okay.
But, you know, you just keep pushing the goal post and you're like, you know what? This is not in my control.
Yeah.
And so I think through, you know, learning and seeing how much your life is not really in your control, you're like, okay, God, it's in your hands. Mm-hmm. You go, you take it. Because I don't know where to go with this, but you know. And I just trust. There's so much trust. There's so much daily trust in him and his purpose and guidance. And so, yeah, I think you've hit on some. The mentorship has been really key. Seek out people who know more than you do, and talk to anybody that anybody's willing to introduce you to, right? If someone's like, I think you should meet this person, and you're like, no, I just don't see that. Doesn't matter. Go meet with them. Go have coffee. Get on a Zoom. Whatever it is. But meet with them because you just never know who or what is going to be that pivotal moment when you're like, oh, do you remember when we were trying to figure that out? And then you realize like how important and how pivotal that was. And so I never turned down a meeting, never turned down an opportunity because you can't see the fit. Because sometimes someone else can see the fit way better than you can. And sometimes you get there and you're like, no, this is not a fit. We are not on the same path, or they're trying to like sell me to do something I don't want to do. But sometimes it also helps you figure out that's not what I want to do. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I had one of the conversations I had was with the gentleman, and this is networking conversation with somebody on Zoom. And I was socializing, you know, what do you think about, we're trying to get away from the term part-time. We're looking at, you know, how does the term flex employee resonate with you? And he was like, it really doesn't matter. I wouldn't put so much effort into it. I mean, you know, gig worker, consultant, flex employee, contractor, it's all the same thing. And I was like, what? Like, I could literally feel like my back like coming up. You know, like people say, like you get your back up. Like I could feel, I was like, no, it's not the same thing. A gig worker has to always be looking for the next gig. A contractor is there for the term of a contract. A consultant is there for their expertise. Part-time employee, a flex employee is an employee, A, it's in the word, and B, they're there for the, like, they're part of the team, they're there for the long haul, and because they're so loyal, they're going to be there for the long haul, right? And so I remember I got in the car, and I had to go pick up Emmett from school, and I was just like, I was done with the call, but my insides were just churning, and I was mad, I was really mad, and I realized in that moment, I was like, this is why I need to do this. I need to be the voice for the people who want this because people think it's the same thing and it's not. And I remember I picked up Emmett and it was a Friday and it was gray and ugly and it was January. And I just remember I started crying and he's like, mom. And one of the things I love about little boys, they're so protective of their moms.
Oh.
And he's like, mom, what's wrong? And I said, it's okay. Everything's okay. I've just had this moment of clarity of what I need to do. I need to be the voice for the people who want and need this. And that's what Better Balance is going to do. And I just looked at him and I said, buddy, it's okay. This is not the first nor the last time that this is going to make me cry, but it's all for the, you know, big greater good. And he was like, okay. And so, you know, it's just, so to your point, like the point is though, sometimes you meet with people who make you realize these things. They help you to have some epiphany that helps drive your business in the next direction. I mean, in that next week when it was actually right when I met Melanie and a few other women who had been helping me. And we sat down and I was like, you know, pounding the table, you know, in the library of like, it's not the same thing. And they were like, no, it's not. I mean, I felt like we were, you know, Mary Poppins' mother, like, you know, out for the suffragists, like, you know, fighting for a cause, you know. So
you anyway, are.
I am. Yeah, we're fighting for a cause. And I will tell you, there are a lot of people who are like absolutely not naysayers. And I'm just like, that's fine. We are busy enough. We don't need to worry about the naysayers right now.
Right. Because they'll always be there.
Yeah, exactly. They will always be there. Yeah. And I just say, you know what? You're not going to be a naysayer when some of your people start leaving to come work for the companies that are saying yes.
I can think of no better way to end it on that note. This has been such a rich, helpful, enlightening conversation, even for me who gets stuck. Or let me rephrase that. This has been a rich conversation, especially for me, who often gets in my own way of wanting to do and pursue new things. And so thank you for these valuable
lessons. You for having me. This has been wonderful. And thank you for seeing things that I didn't see. Like when you were saying the intuitive part, I was like, yeah, it is a really big part of what we do.
Oh, it's all intuition. Yes.
And I mean, love that you saw that.
I saw it in your face, just in your demeanor and your affect. It was the way you described when you would switch posture from working on blah, blah, blah day job to passionate job that you were actually, you know, that you cared about. So I can see it. I can see it in your face. And that you're right. Failure isn't an option here. It's just, it's getting through this, the muddy part right now and continuing to put one foot in front of the other. And even though if it is a small little step each day, it will open itself up in those, you know, it'll turn into that big wide ocean,
right?
From the murky swamp to the big wide ocean. And I can't wait to witness that for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Website?
Betterbalancedlife.com.
And even if, you know, accounting isn't your expertise or your field, but you think that you have the skills and the education and the background to kind of fit into that other category, reach out.
Yeah, or the desire. If this is something that you want or need for your life, please go ahead and become a candidate. Our application's really easy and simple, and we try to keep it that way on purpose. So,
yeah. Thanks, Jill.
Thank you.
BetterBalanceLife.com is the website to learn more about Jill and her work. Oh, and one more thing. After we turned off the microphones and we were chatting a little bit more, she continued to stress just how valuable her networking has been. But not just getting out and meeting and talking to people, but also the educational aspects that come with so many of the networking events. She has learned so much and she has met many new valuable mentors along the way. So my point in mentioning that is that even if you are still frightened and you're light years away from starting your business or quitting your job, or you feel paralyzed in any of this process, one easy step for you to do is to seek out networking and educational opportunities in your area of interest. I promise you that ball will start to roll. Thanks so much for listening to I Could Never Do That. I sincerely appreciate you listening to independent podcasts like this one. And you can support this show with a small donation, and I'll be sure to link up how to do that in the show notes. So here's to working smart, spending smart, and doing what you love. Thanks for listening.